Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200. Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Today we are digging into a case that has been dissected, dramatized, and distorted for decades. John Wayne Gacy. But this time it's a little different. Peacock's new series, Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy. It strips back the folklore and gets to the core of what really happened. How a man with 33 confirmed victims was able to operate in plain sight for years. To do that, we are joined by series showrunner and executive producer Patrick McManus, actor Michael Chernus, who plays John himself, and attorney Bob Mata, whose father was actually part of Gacy's original defense team. And I want to set some ground rules for everybody right away. We are going to have to all speak like your character did, Michael, in the show, with the kind of northern, oh yeah, folksy accent through the duration of this. So. Get ready to step back into it, everybody. I got it out of me after leaving Wisconsin, but I can dive back in. Is everybody good with that? Are we
good with it?
Okay. All right. Yeah. You know, let's start here. This is, the series is coming out on Peacock, may already be out by the time you're watching this, based on the docuseries. Patrick, I want to start with you. What made you think, hey, let's take the John Wayne Gacy story and let's tell it in a way that, that no one's done thus far?
Well, to be honest, that was the first of all, thank you so much for having us. And there's a reason why I'm a writer, so I will not be trying to do the accent.
Anyway,
you look, I started as an actor and someone made it very clear I should be a writer for sure. So I will just say that at first I turned the show down a couple of times before I said yes. And the reason that I had turned it down was that I just genuinely didn't think that there was something else to tell. I didn't think that we should get into telling the story of John Wayne Gacy as a serial killer. And on the third time, the studio, Universal Content and Peacock, asked me to do it. I said, okay. But I want to find a new way in. And, mm-hmm. And that way in was to try to focus it on the families, on the police, on the lawyers and on the victims. I knew what the first three meant. I didn't really know at the time that I said it what focusing on the victims meant. Yeah. But the studio, the network, from that day to today, have been extraordinarily supportive of that. And it wasn't until we got into the writer's room that we really figured out what we ended up calling these short stories, which were we had to pick, obviously, only a select group of the victims. Yeah. But our goal was to tell their a snapshot of their life stories without any connection to John Wayne Gacy. And so these short stories sort of stand alone. They, if you took them out of the show, the true crime aspect of the show would continue unabated. But by putting them into the show, it really is the thing that I think sort of stands the genre on its head. And, you know, by not focusing solely on John Wayne Gacy's story, you also are making a statement that this is ultimately not about the serial killer. This is about the path of sort of destruction that he left behind. And to me and to the writers, and I'll let Michael speak obviously for himself, I think for the actors and the directors, it really did make it a reason to actually make the show.
It shows the human. I mean, because it's easy to go to the horror of John Wayne Gacy. I mean, that's what he's a legend now. I mean, it's the lore. It's the horror of it. But there's real human beings behind this. I mean, granted, you know, we're going back many years, and it seems, you know, in our world, I don't know what the cutoff is, but there seems to be some point where, well, if it was that long ago, we start to lose that sense of humanity of who these people really were, of what their lives were like, and what was stolen from these families, through John's horrible, deeds. How did you guys go about getting into the real life stories of the people? Was this based on things that have been documented over the years? Did you get a chance to have conversations with any of the victims' families? What was that process like?
Well, work in reverse. And I'll just say, first and foremost, we reached out to all of the family members that we could find. And we reached out by email, by phone, by letter. We sent over 30 letters trying to make contact with as many as we could. And at the end of the day, we made contact with five family members. It wasn't an attempt to get their blessing. It was really an attempt to just have a conversation, to let them know that this is what was happening. We didn't want them to be taken by surprise. We wanted them to be able to say whatever they wanted to say to us about it. And with all honesty, the response back that we got was a version of good luck. Like we hope, we wish you well. And so at the end of the day, I think for the writers, for the actors, we're just hoping that we didn't let them down. As it relates to the research, you know, it all began with the documentary that was on Peacock. So we had all of the research that NBC News had provided to us. And then I have a personal researcher who's worked with me on a few shows who really does a very, very deep dive into every nook and cranny of the stories that we are trying to tell. Up to and including for him, we flew him to Chicago, and he actually stood in what I can only imagine looked like, you know, the last scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where, you know, they kept all of the evidence. And he just, Patrick is his name, Patrick Murphy, he reports back with literally thousands of pages of annotation of research. And that was really the foundation, along with the NBC News research, of everything we did. And one of the goals that we had for Patrick was, give us as much as you can give us on these victims so that we can try to build a picture of their lives as best we can.
Yeah. And then try to combine it down into, I mean, granted, you get 10 episodes. It's better than like a 2-hour, movie. You have more room to tell the story, but then there's just so much in a story like this. I mean, another idea I just was running through my mind when you were talking about reaching out, you could have sent Michael out, with some balloons and makeup and knocked on doors. Hey, we'd like to tell a story. What do you guys think? You know, that might have been a little distasteful, but I think, it would have gotten the point across. Michael, obviously you did a phenomenal job in this. I've been watching it and I'm just like, this is a good one. This is one that, it's one of those rewatch series, in my opinion, where you watch it once and then a couple months later, I think I want to see that again. What was the process in this for you? You get the call from your agent saying, hey, they think you look a lot like Gacy. Can you put on some makeup and come downtown and show it off? Or how did that work for you?
I had been told previously in my life that I looked like Gacy. And
really?
Yeah, people had said over the years, you should think about you know, optioning some rights or something.
Sure.
You know, I was not drawn to the to that. I you know, for all the obvious sort of reasons. And my agent called and said they want you to audition for this series. You know, you should take a meeting first with Patrick to find out how they're going to approach it.
Yeah.
And my agent knows Patrick. And so she's like, he's a good guy. I can vouch for him. I think this will be respectful, but you should have a conversation. And I was very hesitant. You know, I just was like, I don't know. You know, part of me was just like, I don't know if I want my name tied to his name.
yeah.
For all time, you know. And Patrick and I had what was supposed to be like a 20-minute Zoom conversation that turned into like an hour real deep dive. And when he told me that there wouldn't be any murder on screen, so it wasn't going to be some, you know, gory, salacious thing.
Yeah.
And then when he told me this idea of these flashback stories of some of the victims and that we get to really meet them before they ever cross paths with John Wayne Gacy, that was really compelling to me. Cause I was like, I've never seen anything like that. The closest thing is like on Orange is the New Black, when you would see some of the inmates before they ever went to prison, to just humanize those people and not make them a number. And Patrick said to me, he was like, you know, just so you know, you're not going to be in every scene. And most actors who would be auditioning to play a lead and something would kind of be upset about that. And I was like, thank God. Thank God. That's such a relief that I don't have to carry this whole thing. So then there was a series of auditions, both over Zoom and in person. And I met Patrick for the first time in New York City on the day of the big eclipse.
And, that's creepy.
I know.
No.
Everyone's outside looking at with their eclipse glasses, and I was going to go and read.
For Gacy. Walk me through, Patrick. I mean, when you're looking to find who's going to be the best Gacy, did you think, you know, like Michael's got this, you know, out of the gate, just kind of knowing his previous work and the fact of the resemblance that exists? Or what are you looking for when you're auditioning folks to play Gacy? Because this is an interesting character. He's dark, he's evil, but he's kind of likable. I mean, that's an interesting one to try and find that balance. How did that process go?
So the answer to that is really twofold. I mean, look, Michael's resume and his work speaks for itself. And if you watch anything that he's been in, or if you've seen any theater that he's done, you know he's got it.
Yeah.
So quite a bit of the audition process is a little bit like how I think about hiring writers, which is, do I want to hang out with you? Right. Yeah. Like, is this going to be a partnership? Right. Because like so often, I've been doing this for 14 years running shows. And so often there's like a general approach of like the actor's over here and you're over here. I don't appreciate that. I don't agree with that. And for me, working with the actors and treating them like true partners is really, really important. And on this one, it was more important than on any of the other shows that I've ever worked on because of the subject matter that we were dealing with and also because of the approach that we're dealing with. So some of it was just, are we going to see eye to eye on the approach and is that going to work? And within literally like seconds of talking to him, I knew that those boxes were going to be checked. So if you ask me, like, did I know right from the start that it was Michael? The answer to that is yes, so long as he didn't say put me in every scene, right?
Sure.
Right. And so long as he understood what we were like trying to do, and he just did. And that carried from that day forward. I mean, like, I just to go into the partnership thing, there's this also general idea sometimes that you have to treat actors as if they are like some like breakable thing and that you have to protect them from the unknown things that go on. And for this show, it was so important that I told Michael everything and that Michael knew all the pitfalls, all the speed bumps, everything that was going to come at us at any given time, because it just was to me this show is more special than anything I've done before. And I mean that with the utmost of respect to what I've done before. And I genuinely think it's more special than anything that I'm probably going to do again. And I mean that with all due respect to the things down the road. Sure. And so, I will say I was asked to meet with a lot of actors, right? Like, and that's just part of the process.
Sure.
But there isn't a question in my mind that once Michael's tape went to the powers that be, I mean, it was within literally an hour of me sending it that everyone was like, it's Michael. And then the last bit that I'll just say to answer what you're saying. Yeah. One of the challenges that I had as a writer, one of the challenges that our writers had as writers, one of the challenges I will again let Michael speak for himself, but I think he had the challenge as well, which is that like your instinct when you're dealing with a serial killer is to make them feel like a serial killer. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that John Wayne Gacy was also quote unquote special in that genre, right? Like he, because of the fact that he was so affable, because of the fact that he was so a part of the community, like, our instinct as writers is to make him seem evil, but we had to constantly push against that because that was who he really was. He was somebody that you know, quote, want to have a beer with. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is instinctually as you don't want to do that. You don't want to like him, but mm-hmm. that was the thing that we consistently had to row towards, and be it the writers, be it the actors, be it the directors, right. Be it in editorial, like the choices that we made of the looks that he makes is to make sure that people understood why he was able to get away with it for as long as he did. And Michael, you know, with all due respect, Michael, and all love, he embodied it.
Yeah. Bob Mata with us, defense attorney, Bob Mata Jr. Bob's dad was on his legal team. He was one of Gacy's attorneys. Bob, one of your gifts you got, correct me if I'm wrong, from your father was the tapes, was tapes of Mr. Gacy himself. And you got to hear, and your dad obviously, you know, knew firsthand what it was like, you know, what this man was like. Can you speak to that? The portrayal of John in the series, he's exactly what we just described. He is kind of likable for being the character that he is. What was your dad's impression, and what did you glean off of those tapes when you got those back in the day?
Well, so I did a podcast, which I hope all of you listen to. I'm assuming you did. The show sounds like it's an awful lot like my podcast in terms of I didn't want to necessarily focus on Gacy at all, because mm-hmm. it had been done ad nauseum. I wanted to focus on the victims, which I did, the arrest, the investigation, which only went 10 days with displays, and then obviously the trial, as my dad was one of the trial attorneys. And so I went into the podcast. I'm like, oh man, you know, I'm going to have my father. I've got, like, this is a shoe-in in terms of the interviews that I was lining up for that. So I asked my father, the first thing I asked him is, what was your impression of John Wayne Gacy when you first met him? And this is in the podcast. He says to me, Bob, he was an arrogant prick is what he said, which really kind of articulated it in a way that after I listened to the tapes, because I had the tapes for 30 years and never fully listened to them. Because they're that disturbing, and
you didn't like put them in like your car, like when you're like mixtapes for girlfriends. It's no, like here's no. Ace of Base, here's Lionel Richie, and here's a little snippet of John.
Yeah, no,
are you an Ace of Base?
Yes, all right. I saw the sign.
Skipping in deep. I really didn't. Oddly enough, I got them for my 21st birthday, and I'm you know, I'm in my 50s now, so I had them for a long time. It was my friends that had that kind of just morbid interest and curiosity that really wanted to listen to them more than I did. And then, you know, but as in Michael, I did a quite a bit of voice acting in my podcast of trying to get into the mind of Gacy. And it's a scary, weird place to be. So, you know, I can really feel where you're coming from with respect to, you know, you kind of really getting into that character, because to me, and, you know, obviously is that being a weird part of my life since I was 10 years old and really knowing everything about the whole story because of my father's involvement in the case. I was like, man, this dude was the scariest of them all because of everything that Patrick was just talking about, this, his ability to be this chameleon where he's just so affable and likable. He was like, I would always say he was kind of like the Norm character in Cheers when he'd walk in the bar. And it was true. He was that guy, you know, yeah. to the people that knew him, they really, really liked him and enjoyed him. You know, but he just had that switch that it was always lurking. It was always there. You know, it wasn't like, you know, when it was kill time, whether, you know, when he goes out to troll at 2 a.m. and, you know, ends up as kill time is usually early morning hours. You know, I mean, it was always lurking, and you saw it most when he kind of, you know, lost sight of what worked for him in terms of being able to operate for so long with Robert Peace, his last victim, where he just kind of, he put it all out there in terms of how he operated. And, you know, it was so evident that it was clear that Rob Peace had been snatched up by Gacy that, you know, he had to have known at that point that he was going to get caught, you know? So it was, yeah, man. I mean, Michael, I hope that you were able to listen to the tapes, because like hearing him, his callousness, his ability to not have any remorse or thought whatsoever about these kids' lives that he ended was beyond chilling, man.
Michael, how did you get into the character for like, what did you do to get yourself prepared to really, to get in the skin of Gacy, you know, pardon the dark pun there, but to be him and to play him in the unique way that this character needs to be played?
Well, first of all, thanks. Everyone, thanks for having me here. I'm so excited that Bob Mata Jr. is here. I said before we started recording, I feel like I'm meeting a little kid meeting a celebrity or something. Because I did listen to the DeVents Diaries, the John Gacy tapes a lot. And what an incredible resource that was for me. I know that wasn't the intention in releasing those tapes, but for me, there isn't a ton of, you know, there's hardly any video footage of him. There's really just two kind of main interviews, and those are way after he'd already been convicted and been incarcerated for a long time. So to have access to his, not just his speaking voice, but just his mind, for lack of a better word, so shortly after he'd been arrested, that was just, it was an incredible insight. Yeah, I mean, I agree with your dad. I think John Gacy was an arrogant prick, and I don't find him charming. I understand what people mean when they say he was charming, but I don't think he was very charming. I think he was persuasive. I think he was manipulative. I think he was actually a good actor. He knew how to read a room. He knew what other people wanted him to be in any moment. So if they needed him to be the jolly joker, happy neighbor, he could do that. If they wanted him to be kind of raunchy, one of the guys, he could do that. If he needed to be kind of the Polish immigrant, you know, blue collar guy, he wore masks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The clown was just one of those many masks that I think, you know, has been wrongly portrayed in the media, that this idea of the killer clown, that was just like a small part of who he was. It was one of the many clubs and faces that clubs he belonged to and faces that he wore to slip by. You know, he got away with it for so long. He would, you know, make cops feel uncomfortable by talking about homosexuality, and they just like kind of turn the other cheek. So to get into him, I think I thought about it a lot in that way, that there were just these multiple Johns. I mean, he even said it, and there were all these different Gacys, and trying to just think in any given scene, like, which version am I embodying? Mm-hmm. You know, we knew that we did never want to do like the mustache twirly kind of like evil serial killer thing, that it was more subtle than that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. Early on, I was like, I don't know. I sort of didn't know how to embody him because he's such a mystery. And Bob, you talk about that on the podcast. Like, this guy was also just, you know, forgive my French, but he was batshit crazy too. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's no logic, really. He goes one way and then he goes another, and then he's saying he did do it, and then he's saying he didn't do it. And so for me, it eventually became that thing of like, who am I talking to, and what do they want? Who do they want me to be, and how can I manipulate them, and how can I appear harmless until that final moment when I am very harmful. But I was very afraid to be charming. I didn't want people to like him. Yeah. I didn't want the audience to go away and be like, I like him. And then I think Patrick said to me, like, you have to go there, because that's, then we understand why someone would get in that car, why someone would take that job at PDM, why someone mm-hmm. would, you know, share a beer with him or share a joint with him. We have to understand that. And as an audience also kind of experience that of like being mm-hmm. drawn in by him and then realizing who he is.
Man, I'm really excited. To see your performance, man. Cause I mean, you, what you were just saying really kind of embodies exactly what he was. And, you know, and I've seen, obviously there's been a few movies out, you know, with sure. various different actors, but in terms of what you just said, and I know the, your chops in terms of your acting skills, cause I've seen quite a few things that you've been in, man. I'm really excited to see it, man. I am. I think that, it sounds like you guys nailed this thing.
I'm excited for you to see it, Bob, because like I was very inspired by your podcast and a number of other, and you know, I know you know the book, but Boys Enter the House, like there, like this aspect of the story of just what was lost is really what our show is about, you know.
Yeah.
And the when people are taken from us in their youth, in their prime. Any death is tragic, but it's just, it's unconscionable. Like ripping away someone, you know, when they have a summer job or when they're just bought a car or they just had their first girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. Like, you know, it's like kids in high school, kids just out of high school. Like, man, the fact that this guy got the airtime that he got, in the 70s and in the 80s and in the 90s, which just, it was so wrong. He's an uninteresting, despicable human being. I love that you called him the creep, Bob, that you wouldn't even say his name after a while in the podcast. That really stuck with me.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200. Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200. Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.